Have we gone full Dabo Swinney in the portal, Michael? Are we just not going to take any more commits, or are we just being patient, making sure we get the right pieces? That's what we're going to talk about today. Do we have a portal problem? Has the king lost his crown? It seems like there's a little bit of panic among the fan base, right? That the portal's been wide open, and we have not got a single commit yet. We've seen some players go look for opportunities elsewhere, but we're going to dig into everything today as maybe there's a little reason to be worried, but also maybe there's not. And I think there's two sides to play to that coin. So we've got a fully loaded episode for you guys today. We also got some NFL draft talk as round one is in the books. And then baseball has a ranked series coming up this weekend against number 19 Louisville. So we're going to tack that on there at the end. So appreciate you guys joining us. I know we're kind of going to like an every 2 week thing here. Just kind of, you know, been busy. Your boy is back in the gym trying to get, you know, trying to lose some weight, man. And I'm sore in places that don't even make sense, Michael. But, you know, I'm trying to build a habit out of it. I haven't forgotten about the quarterback episode that I promised you guys. Start working on that. So just glad to be back with you guys and talking about Florida State football. So Michael, how are you, my friend? Ready to jump into this one?
Oh, it's good to be back. Yeah, I also understand that. You know, listen, when you get around our age, you start getting a Dunlap, you know, when your belly Dunlapped your pants.
Yeah.
And so you got to work on that. Your boy over here is working on that as well too. But no, I mean, yeah, there's some panic. There's some fear. There's also some confusion about FSU's spring portal addition. And so, yeah, let's get into it, figure out what's going on.
For sure. And so that's where we're going to start with the portal. And let's first talk about the outgoing players here. Now, I know there's been a little bit of I don't want to say a lot of heartache over this, right? Because I don't think anybody's really made a huge – there hasn't been any huge losses. But you have seen 9 guys so far make their way to the portal, and none come in. So people are obviously kind of hyper focused on everyone who leaves. You know, all of a sudden Trevor Jackson leaves, and it's like, oh, what's going on? Like,
right.
You mean a walk-on third-string quarterback?
Who's like, never going to play here? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, why are we getting so – just upset over every single guy that leaves? I think we just have to, you know, wait for all the dust to settle.
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of make the assessment here of how things really shook out. And so to go over the 9 players that did leave, obviously we just mentioned Trevor Jackson. Now, look, I will say with Trevor Jackson, I thought he could be good in this offense, right? I thought that was a piece that I just wanted to see what he could do. We often talked about, is he still alive? Because we never heard anything about him. But I think with Kevin Sperry coming in, having a big spring as a freshman, looking like very athletic, very good for the Gus Malzahn offense, he kind of passed Trevor Jackson. So it was no surprise that he was going to hit the portal. Then you see Jalen Early. I think this is probably your biggest impact here as far as the guys who have left, because he actually did play for you last year. We're going to talk about their impact in just a second. Then you have Aaron Hester, who was – never really played. Danas White, who came in and was a kind of more of a hit to the depth than anything, but really hadn't contributed anything in his one season here. You had TJ Ferguson on the offensive line that left. Not a big surprise there. And really, when you talk about TJ Ferguson, and look, this is not to trash on these kids. Like, they came in, they gave effort, and I hope they do well wherever they go. It's just more of setting the stage of why this is not a reason to hit the panic button over who's leaving.
Right.
Look, TJ Ferguson wasn't great at Alabama. That's why he didn't play there. Then he came here, and we saw why he didn't play at Alabama. He probably wasn't going to be in the plans this year either. So when he leaves, that's not a big surprise. Obviously, you have Jaylen Brown, who exited, which was not planned. It's not like he got in the portal on purpose. You know, I mean, my guy was just, you know, Pablo Escobar over here on the team. He had more bricks than DJU was hitting in the stadium. But so, I mean, that was a loss then, you know, maybe you didn't want to see happen there.
Yes.
And then, of course, you know, you got Jordan Scott, 6'7" wide receiver, who didn't work out either. Not a huge loss there. And this is a guy that came over. You pretty much took a flyer on him, right? You just saw you got 6'7". He's got some size. Let's see what he can do coming out of JUCO.
Yeah,
man. I mean, there was the clips that came out in practice in camp where he got locked up repeatedly by a freshman.
That's right.
And so it was like, man, if it's not going to work, you got to cut bait and move on. And so then really the one that I think really set the panic alarm off was Hakeem Williams, right? Yeah. Obviously, everybody freaked out over this one. I even saw another outlet that maybe it was just clickbait, right, on their YouTube channel where they said FSU loses the starter. Yeah. And I watched the whole video, and I was waiting to see who the starter they were talking about was. because it's not Hakeem Williams, right? And this is not a shot at Hakeem, because we both had really high hopes for him this year. And we both had said in a previous episode where, like, man, we thought this was a do or die year for Hakeem Williams because we're approaching bust territory. And now it just looks like, man, that's just not going to pan out, and he's going to have to go somewhere else and look for other opportunities. So now we'll see if he progresses at another stop. But, you know, I just think when you look at all these nine guys, right, what is their impact? None of these guys were going to make a big impact in 2025. Jalen Early, like I mentioned, had potential as a younger guy and was a good depth piece. So that's going to hurt you a little bit. Played 300 snaps last year. Other than that, man, I mean, maybe Jaylen Brown had an opportunity to get on the field this year, but obviously I don't disagree with what Mike Norvell did to just basically dismiss him from the program for what he did. But other than that, man, I don't think you really lost anything here, and there's nothing really to hit the panic button over.
Yeah, I mean, I think the players – well, let me just start here. I think Mike Norvell went into the offseason with determination of, we can no longer babysit people. We can no longer be this kind of program that just tolerates, you know, incompetence, that tolerates loafing, that tolerates a lack of toughness, that tolerates a lack of discipline. So they were very determined this spring, based on everything we heard, that they were going to push players to the limit. Not that they weren't pushing them before, but, you know, Mike has always been termed a player's coach, right? That players, yes, they liked playing for him because they related well to him. He pushed them, but they liked playing for him. I think Mike Norvell came into this offseason with a determination. You know, we saw in last season, a lot of last season, there was a lack of discipline, a lack of toughness, a lack of want to, a lot of loafing. And I think those coaching staff came into this season saying, no, we're not going to allow that. And they were very determined to weed out all of that. And so a lot of these players that you end up seeing or transferring are players that just weren't ever going to contribute. Trevor Jackson, yes, I agree with you. I thought he could have been a great fit in the offense. But when Kevin Sperry came on and started really just taking over and having better outcomes than him, and even Brock Glenn for the most part, You saw the writing on the wall with Kevin, with Trevor Jackson, and a lot of people assume that he would never play here again as well. You know, I think the Jalen Early situation is the one that I think I'm most like, man, could we have not gotten something out of him? Now, this is more of a failure on, former offensive lineman coach coordinator Alex Atkins, who, you know, we all know he stopped recruiting, he stopped developing. There's a reason why he got fired, right? And so that happened there. The Jalen Brown situation, the boy was caught with a countryside load of drugs. And so, yeah, definitely he's going to get dismissed from the program, which is unfortunate because he was that young, speedy, gadgety type player that I think now they might be looking for in the portal again just to replace, because he's young and had development. But as you said, most of these players, they were really just depth pieces. And even at that, they weren't the two deep depth pieces. They were like three or four.
Right.
And so it makes sense that Florida State's weeding them out because they need to go get, you know, they need to get tougher. They need to get more disciplined. And depending on if they end up bringing people in, I don't see this as a net minus or a net positive. I think it's just really net neutral with the players that left. Now, let me just say real quick with the Hakeem situation, you know, it's disappointing. But also when you look at the context around Hakeem, he came from a really terrible high school where he was the best player. They played terrible competition. He was the best player. And I think what's frustrating for a lot of Florida State fans around Hakeem is, yes, did he have a terrible position coach? Yes. Did, like, some of the legends of Florida State, like P-Dub and some of those big guys went and helped Florida State recruit and the money they spent to get him? Yes. Is he a bust at Florida State? Yes. Is there potential he could go somewhere else and be better? Sure. But I'm not sure if the totality of that should fall necessarily on the coaching staff. I think they own a bit of it, but I think also too, maybe we were just, he's one of those few five stars that was never really a five star to begin with.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that's the thing about, like, especially with offensive and defensive linemen, right? That's why there's always that thought process to, you just take as many as you can and you let them sort themselves out, because you have a very low hit rate on those guys. And a big part of that is, like, some of these camps do help with these things now.
Yeah.
But if you're in high school and you are, you know, 6'6", 300 pounds as a high schooler, you're just going to run over everybody. Exactly. And so you're going to look so much better than what you might be in college when everybody is 6'6", 300 pounds.
That's right.
And so, like, yeah, I mean, you had that, and then he was injured and he came in out of shape, and you had a lot of the things that just never really worked out with him. I just think a lot of people are bummed that it's like, man, that was the crown jewel recruit that you've had. Him and Julian Armella and Luke Cromanhawk, those were your pretty much the only five stars that you were able to sign, and you got nothing out of any of them. Yep. And so, like, that is, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, if you're forever trying to balance the scale on Mike Norvell, right? And you have good on one side and bad on the other side, and you already have recruiting issues that are a big time weight on the bad side. Now you're starting to see those where it's like, okay, well, he did sign this guy, that guy, and that guy, but none of them worked out. So you're just piling more sand on that side that's weighing the bad versus the good. But at the same time, like, you do see them get other guys who maybe don't come in as five stars to overperform. So it is disappointing. But, you know, I mean, just there's a lot of guys that just don't work out. You know what I mean? Like you said, five star that maybe wasn't truly a five star, maybe a little bit overrated as a recruit. And, you know, but I mean, again, a lot of these guys, I think you're spot on with Jalen Early. Like, I think that's more of an indictment on Alex Atkins than anything. Right. And so you never got anything out of any of his recruits.
Right.
And so hopefully this is something that gets remedied moving forward. I mean, but really, it's like you said, man, this is roster churn. This happens at every roster every single year. And I think one of the things too, you know, like with Florida State, you should never be worried about like a Denas White, a three-star coming out of high school who's like a redshirt freshman or whatever, who leaves the roster. The only reason you even paid attention is because you've under-recruited the defensive line position
for such a long time
you just don't have depth. So it's like, he probably is not quality enough to play at Florida State.
That's right.
But because you've done so bad in high school recruiting, you've been so reliant on the portal, and you lost half of those guys after last year, that now it does become significant because it's a depth hit, and you got to go out and replace that. So that's the only reason that makes a big difference. And, you know, as we look into the signings, which there's none to talk about, I think, did you miss that signing, Michael?
I don't know. I didn't see any.
It must've been a silent commit. But I think when you look at, I think some of the reasons you get these get hyper-focused on the outgoings is because you don't have anything incoming to talk about right now.
That's right.
I think that's a big part of it. And I think when you put the whole picture together, I think when you keep in mind that, like, it's not going to be cheap or easy to get guys to come into a team that went 2-10. Most people do not picture Florida State as a team shooting to win any kind of championship. And the staff does have somewhat of an uncertain future. So this is tough, man, because this is a lot like coming out of that 2021, even 2020 into 2021, when you had to go and find a guy like a Jermaine Johnson and a Keir Thomas and a Jamie Robinson, who had to come in and commit to a program that had uncertain times and was coming off a bad point in their history, to be able to ask them to come in and be like, man, we need you to help rebuild this. You might not be able to get a ring out of this. You might not be able to stay longer than 1 year because we might have a new staff going into
next year. That's right.
You know what I mean? It may just be a money play or something like that. That's the hard part.
Right.
You know, going into 2022, you were still uncertain then as well. So I think you have to keep those things in mind as to, like, the people who want, you know, the day Nico's in the portal or whatever, and you're like, we got to go get him. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to go get all the highly, highly ranked prospects. You're going to have to kind of find that diamond in the rough, like that Jared Verse and things like that. Not because Florida State can't get those players, because we've seen it happen in the past. It's because that's the circumstance you're in right now. And so you have to play the field, see who's realistic that you can get. And, you know, I expected them to move faster because they have done it in the past, and there are thousands of players in the portals. But moving fast and bad eval screwed them last year. It's more like, be patient, get it right, but move quickly before you miss out on all the good players. But what were we talking about the other day? There was, 10,000 players from NAIA all the way up to Division I in the portal?
Jeez.
There's no shortage of guys in the portal. You know, and then, like, I will say one thing, too. I think also you have to remember that with potential roster limits, which I don't know if this thing's ever going to get settled.
I know.
I saw it just got thrown out again because of roster limits. Yep. But with potential roster limits, man, you can't keep everybody.
That's right.
You just can't, especially if you want to add more. So you're going to see some guys go. And I think now that college football has become more like the NFL than ever, you're going to see a lot more of the roster management part kind of go that way too, right? Like, it doesn't hurt to bring in a guy to spring mini camp and test him out, see how it looks. And if he doesn't work out, you move on from him. There's 10,000 more players to choose from in the portal. You now have to manage not only potential roster size, but the payroll too. Like, there's no point in just paying Jalen Scott or whatever his name was, Jordan Scott, if he just wasn't good enough to play.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think that's a big part of it. And then, you know, something that, and I'll throw it back to you, but something that you mentioned too, I think that's big to remember, is that you had told me this in the pre-show, is that, like, look, guys aren't necessarily coming in to be backups, especially on a team that went 2-10 last year, right? You're not going to get Pitts. I'm just pulling a team. I don't know who, if Pitt has a receiver in the portal or not. You're not going to get Pitts starting wide receiver to come in and be a backup at Florida State when you're probably shooting for the same bowl game that Pitt's shooting for this year.
Correct.
Maybe you can just pay a little bit more. You also probably aren't trying to scare off a lot of the starters that you brought in the fall because they did a good job in the portal session. So I'll throw it back to you, and then we'll talk about some targets that they are looking at, even though we don't have any that are committed right now.
Yeah, you know, I just think the spring portal window is such a unique window because, again, like you've said already, and I'm just really affirming what you're saying, is one, it's going to be more costly to get a player to, or what I said, what did I say in the pre-show, to buy a player? Cause that's basically what you're doing now. It's going to be more costly to buy a player in the spring window. Why? Because they are getting in the spring window for more leverage. They've already leveraged their team for a raise, right? They think they deserve more. They need more. And their team is, you know, calling their bluff. So they get into the portal. They're not coming to Florida State, who just came off a 2-10 season, without making the money they want to get, right? Now, they might end up somewhere else and not get that money, but they're definitely going to leverage that against Florida State. And so what I'll say is kudos to Mike Norvell and the staff for, like, being willing to say, yeah, we ain't paying that because you're not worth that. The market value is not worth that.
Right.
But also, too, I think another point, again, is that they use the majority, or at least what we've been told, speculated, whatever it is, that they've used the majority of their NIL budget in that winter transfer portal season, right? They went and got what they would deem were starter levels or at least two deep level players in that winter portal season. So right now, again, they have money. Obviously, they're saving money from, like, some of the people, you know, Jordan Scott leaving, you know, Jalen Early leaving, you know, Hakeem, some of that money.
You're freeing up cap space.
You're freeing up cap space, exactly. So now you have to look at that smaller pool of money you have left, and you have to say, what are our critical, like, oh my goodness, if we don't, you know, have this position covered, we're going to be in a heap of dog poop come the season. What is that? And then can we go find that for a reasonable price? And you're also looking for depth. But Jesse, you hit it straight on. Like, these players coming into this portal season, not only are they looking for money, they're looking for playing time. So if you can't guarantee that they're going to be at least on the two deep, and for most of them, number one, they ain't coming to Florida State. They're not coming there. And then I think the third thing, and I'll throw this back to you, is you also have to look at Florida State's history of what they've picked up during the spring transfer portal season. Like, everyone assumes that, oh, you know, Mike has gone out and got a bunch of players in both portal seasons. He's actually not. You go back to 2021, they only picked up, you remember defensive end Marcus Cushing? Remember him? Yeah. Yep. Whatever happened, right?
Yeah.
They got Dylan Givens, who turned out to be really great. They got Malik Fester. They got Justin Turnteen. And they got Dimitri Emanuel, who, you know, end up using some of that. In 2023, the spring window, we all remember it. And I think we're all biased to it because we picked up the best receiver we had since Kelvin Benjamin and Keon Coleman, right?
Yeah.
So we did that. And then even last year, they picked up Ashton Barker and Justin Crier. Outside of that, hasn't been very much in the spring. And so for us to go in panicking, like, oh, we haven't got any signings. What's going on? The world's falling apart. Like, let's just tamper that because they have a limited budget to spend. You're going to have to overpay for somebody. So you might as well make sure you get the right somebodies, right? And they typically don't do a lot of big spending or acquisition in this round anyways.
Yeah, and to continue on to that before we get to the targets, I do think that maybe they just like a lot of what they got because they did a good job in the fall portal session. But, you know, one thing that I thought was an interesting conversation was, like, do the expectations for 2025 kind of guide some of the decisions that they're trying to make? Like, do you need to go out and pay Keon Coleman? Because, you know, I don't know what Keon got when he came here, but obviously we know the numbers have went up since then. Are you do you really need to go out and pay $1 million or $2 million for Keon Coleman? Is he going to make that big of a difference this year?
Right.
Or would you be better off putting in that same money to about 5 or 6 pieces are going to solidify that foundation like we talked about before? And so, like, the reality of the situation, because if you ask any Florida State fan and any Florida State coach and any Florida State player right now,
right,
what is your goal for 2025? It's to win a championship. That's everybody's goal. Everybody's goal.
Yep.
Let's take off the garnet gold glasses. What are the realistic expectations? Win 8 games so your butt has a job next year.
Thank you.
That is just where you're at. And then you can use that positive momentum, as much as we hate to hear that, to turn this thing around and kind of, you know, snowball that into the future. So then you are going after the Keons because you have everything else in place. And then you just need that crown jewel of the class in there. And so, like, that could be guiding some of your decisions when it's like, we're not going to go after this big time. Like, we're not going to go after a Nico because we got Thomas Castellanos. He fits the offense and he can win us 8 games.
Right.
We don't need that. So we're not going to go pay for that. And I think also that comes back to, like we just mentioned, they did a really good job of hitting needs in the first portal session. I thought they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I think they did really good with picking up Deuce and Squirrel White. I think they did really good on the offensive line. It sounds like they did a great job in the linebacker room.
Yep.
There's a few places I'd like to see them make some different additions that we're going to talk about that in a second. And like you said, man, they're not super active in the spring session. Like, I can think of Keon and Dylan Gibbons as two of the ones that really hit. Of course, you know, Demetri Emmanuel ended up being an all ACC guy.
Yeah.
But you just need a couple of pieces to accentuate the roster more than you're trying to rebuild in the spring, because again, none of these guys were here for install. So everyone that you already have on the roster is already one step ahead.
Yeah.
And so, staying in the vein of expectations, if you're trying to win 8 to 9 games, right, that I think is not where we want to be.
Correct.
But we could be accepting of that if that's where we end up, right?
Correct.
What do you need to get there? And I think this is the more important question, because everybody focuses on, well, we didn't go get the number one player in the portal to do this or whatever. If we're trying to win 8 to 9 games, and guys, hear me, please. This is not the standard at Florida State. Like,
no,
we should always try and win more than 8 to 9 games.
Yeah.
What do you need to get there, man? I think what you have right now can dang near get you there, right? I think you need to add some depth and a couple veterans at key positions. A top player would be nice, but I don't know that they're going to go out and spend that kind of money. I think you're more this year looking for a large collection of good than a couple of greats here and there, right?
Yeah.
You just want to have a lot of good, not just, well, this guy's really good and this guy's really good. And, you know, we were really heavily relying on that guy. Because we even said in the last episode, man, that, like, I didn't even think they needed more than about 5-6 quality guys in the spring session, and that was it. And I probably would have even taken that down to 3 or 4 had you not lost a couple of receivers.
I think maybe
you could go get one there too. And, you know, when you talk about that whole next year and the way things are going to break, man, there are so many different X factors that are going to factor into that, not outside of what they do in the spring portal session. I mean, injuries. This is going to be the biggest factor of 2025 for me. If Florida State loses 3 or 4 key pieces, man, I'm not taking 4-8 or 5-7 off the table, because the depth is just something that's still not there. This is what I wanted them to address in the spring portal session was depth, not the high-end guys. I wanted it to be where we sign 2 offensive linemen, so if one gets hurt, we're good. I wanted you to sign a defensive lineman that could be on the 2 deep, so if Daryl Jackson is out, you're still good. You're not falling down to relying on a freshman.
Yep.
You know, that's going to be huge there. Could new faces emerge? You know, camp was closed, man. We don't know what we have as fans and media members.
We didn't
get to see a lot of this. They may like who they already got. We've heard a lot of talk about Javon Boggs being a emerging wide receiver, that's somebody there. Could Chroma be that guy? KJ Sampson had a good spring at defensive tackle. You know, there's luck. Luck is going to be a big part of 2025, man. One thing I'll throw this. I know I read Phil Steele's magazine every year. And one of the things he talks about is turnover margin and how usually when it's really, really far swayed in one direction or the other, it is a very high improbability that that's going to happen again, right? Florida State was minus 16 in turnover margin last year. Jeez. Chances are, and I think he says double digits is usually one that's really hard to sustain year over year. If that comes back to center, that's probably two or three wins right there.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and then the competition. When you look at the schedule, your top tier games are going to be on par of last year. Like Alabama is your Notre Dame. Clemson is your Clemson. Miami, probably not as good as last year. Florida, maybe a little better than last year.
Yeah.
But everything below that is not going to be as tough, right? You don't have Memphis. You have Kent State. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Wake Forest. You don't have, you know, whatever other team, the other teams that you played on there last year, where every team, like every team last year up until the bowl game had at least a 500 or better record. I think you didn't, I think you played two teams that had a non top 50 defense last year. Mm-hmm. And I think only like three or four of them have a top 50 defense this year. Gus is going to have a decent offense. It's probably not going to be number one, but it's probably not going to be number one, whatever the heck.
101.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Tony White's probably going to have a pretty solid defense. Yeah. You do that, and you'll hit that mark. So I just wonder, Michael, and I'll throw it back to you on this before we talk about the targets, is are they approaching this from like, I need to win 8 to 9 games minimum. So let's be really calculated in every move that we make to make sure that we hold on to the pieces we like and we get the pieces that we need to get to that number. And then if things go good, luck goes our way. Some, maybe these other teams just aren't as good as we think they are. Mm-hmm. Then we surprise to the upside because they're obviously going to tell you they want to compete for championships, but we all know, man, you got to shore up that foundation to win 8 games to save your job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mike Norvell entered this offseason thinking, okay, I got to save my job. And by saving my job, I think what would save my job, like, and feel good about momentum going into 2026 is an 8-win season. Okay. So I'm going to clean house and a lot of the coaching staff, right? I'm going to go get coaches. Now, in order to go get those coaches, they need guarantees from Michael Alford that this is not a 1-year deal unless there's like a complete disaster, right? So that's the next level. Then you went out and you actually, and I agree with you, you actually did a darn good job as best as you could coming off of 2-10 in the portal season. You salvaged a high school class that was in the 50s and it got it in the 20s, right? Yep. And so then you built a layer. Now you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, of all of these players that end up leaving, I think the only one that really, and I say, when I say caught off guard, I don't mean it like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were leaving. More like, oh, okay. Was Jalen Early. I think he's probably the only one they did not anticipate really leaving. I have no information about this. I assume Mike had the, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, Hakeem Williams conversation. That's what I think. Okay.
Yeah.
So yes. So then you look at that and I think they're looking at this saying we have the pieces to go 8 wins.
Right.
I think they feel that way. Yep. Now they're saying, do we want to add to that, to make that 8 win feel more secure? Potentially getting to a 9th win, right? You know what I always talk about? I use a baseball term for football, which is war. Your wins above replacement, right? I think they feel like their war right now is about 8 wins. And so they're looking at this spring transfer portal window and saying, is there somebody that we can get that's going to help depth, that might even help the 2 deep, and it's going to help our war go to like 0.5, 8.5. 9, right?
Right.
And can we get them on an affordable price? So if they don't make a move, then our job is to then to assume they feel like their war is secure, that they're at 8 wins and they think they can win with this group. Barring, as you said so correctly, is barring any surprise leaving and injury.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you made a couple of points that I want to expand on real quick that I thought were really good. I think when you talk about the war aspect, right, sure, there's big guys you could go after in the portal. But first off, who's actually obtainable? Let's start with that. Yep. Like, just because it's on the shelf doesn't mean you can buy it, right?
You can look at it. You can't touch it.
Exactly. That ain't the way my bank account is set up. So I think that's important to remember at first. But when you look at the collection of what you have and what you want to do with this offense and this defense and the pieces that you have, when we talk about expectations for 2025, you want to win a championship. That's right. Is every single year. What you can't have happen is last year. You no. absolutely cannot afford to have that happen. So you need to do everything within your power to ensure that maybe we don't win a championship, but we sure the heck don't lose 10 games.
Thank you.
And so, like we said, man, is spending that money to get a high-level, say, receiver out of the portal, to get a Keon Coleman, is his WAR going to be better than getting this for the same price, getting three or four players that are going to ensure that you win that eight games, absolutely, no matter what happens? And to me, I think that's kind of a smarter approach, because if you spend that $2 million on whoever and it doesn't work out, well, guess what? It didn't do you any good. You're fired now anyway.
Thank you.
And yep. So you didn't get anything out of it. So I think we still have to wait and see who they go after, yep, who they get, yep, right, before we make or break this portal season. Because I do think they need some pieces, right?
That's right.
I do think they need to get some guys. But I'm not panicking over any of the ones that left.
Yeah.
And I hate seeing early go because I like O-line, yeah, depth, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm not worried that they haven't got anybody yet, but maybe I lifted the cover off the panic button, right? My hand's not even over it yet, but that glass case they put over it that you see,
like, yeah,
maybe I flipped it up, okay, but I don't even have my hand near it yet. I'm just looking at it. You know what I mean? Just thinking that, like, you need to get somebody.
Yeah. I would say for me, okay, you've lifted up the panic. I would say for me, I'm looking at the panic button. I haven't lifted the lid, but I'm like, should I lift this lid? I think that's where I'm at, because I do think, again, like we've said, I do think they, like, when it comes to like DB, when it comes to D-line, I think those are probably the two biggest. And I do think like a depth wide receiver could be super helpful, yep, because another speeder, because you did lose, you know, the Scott kid, right? And yes, he was getting locked up by a freshman, so I guess, you know, it is what it is. But then you also lost Jaylen Brown as well, and so that one wasn't anticipated. So I think, yeah, having a depth piece wide receiver, I think having, you know, maybe two depth piece defensive lineman, maybe one depth piece offensive lineman, and maybe a DB, and I think you're good. So it has me looking at the panic button, wondering if I should lift the lid.
Yeah, I'm just blowing the dust off of it. You know what I mean? Or maybe I'm looking for it. What did I do with that panic button?
Where's that panic button at?
I thought I buried that thing after last year, but it's back. But no, I agree. And the only reason I say that is because I think you do need help at a couple positions. And so that's a good time to transition into the targets that Florida State's looking at right now. Really, for me, I thought the only place – and this is, again, this goes back to when you look at the sum of parts and you look at what you're trying to do with Gus Malzahn's offense and Tony White's defense. The only place I thought you really needed to get a home run hitter was probably at running back. And only because I think everything else that you have is good enough. And I think the running backs are good enough. I just thought with a run heavy offense that could be a game changer. That could be a good WAR for you. Yeah. Defensive line is somewhere I worry about the depth. And we've talked about this before the show. On the defensive line, my biggest concern is who's going to start opposite of James Williams.
Yeah.
I think Jason Jenkins is that guy, but we've heard about his injury, and it's potentially the only one that's going to carry into the fall.
Right.
Now, if he's just out for the Alabama game, okay, I'm a little more nervous for the Alabama game. But then you got 3 weeks before Virginia that hopefully he can be back.
That's right.
Yeah. But you know, if his does carry into the fall, and this is something we don't know, if it doesn't carry in the fall, then I'm not worried about it. If it does, then I'm a little concerned about your defensive end there. But other than that, it's just really more depth concerns than anything.
Yep.
So to get onto the targets here, first off, Florida State is hosting a few guys over the course of this week and into next week. You know, maybe I'll hover over the panic button if we don't land any of these.
Yeah.
But the first up, and I think the most important on this list, is Houston cornerback Jeremiah Wilson. He is on campus right now, depending on when you're watching this. He is actually the number 3 player in the portal. And if you remember from last episode that we did 2 weeks ago, I said when we were talking about our targets, I said I thought for DB, I love a lot of the guys that you have. I really do. I think a lot of these young DBs got that dog mentality. They got some playing time last year. I really thought you could use a Fentrell Cypress-esque veteran presence to stabilize the position.
Yeah.
At least so then you could have options at all the other corner positions. And that's kind of what it looks like they're going after with Jeremiah Wilson here. 2 years at Syracuse, obviously last year at Houston, played 1,000 snaps in his career, 86.7 PFF grade at Houston, and that's remarkable. Four interceptions, five PBUs, only allowed a 44.7% reception rate last year, which is very good. So that's one of the ones that, like, man, if you can get him, I think you're golden at corner. I think that's the only piece that you need is to get somebody like this. Now, they are also hosting Hawaii cornerback Caleb Brown. He will be visiting next week. He has 800 snaps of experience. I believe he started at Kennesaw State, the FCS level. 77.1 PFF last year, 7 PBUs in 23, 6 in 24. So this is a productive guy. Hawaii's not a great program. They don't play in a great conference. I understand all that.
Right.
But, man, you know, if you could just get one of these two guys to shore up that DB position, preferably Jeremiah Wilson, then I think as far as that goes at DB, I think you're good, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think the Jeremiah Wilson kid is probably the most intriguing of that just because there's super mutual interest. I believe him and Tony White have some connection there.
They know each other from Syracuse.
And
I do know, apparently, from what I understand, Jeremiah Wilson is down to basically Florida State and UCF.
Yeah.
And I would almost be willing to bet if he commits, I don't even know if they bring Caleb Brown in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hoping that the Jeremiah Wilson kid will hit. I hope that will strike because I do think, and watching his film, he had four interceptions and he took one back to the house. You know how many interceptions Florida State had last year?
I don't think none.
One. Okay. So, you know, that, I mean, Florida State had four total.
Oh, yeah.
From everybody. And he had four by himself and took one back to the house.
That's crazy.
So
scored more touchdowns than our offense did.
So I would love for this kid to be this. I think they're also hosting Tony Johnson, the wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm going to get to him. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to get to him next.
So they're doing that. From the defensive side, you know, I think this would be a huge one if they could get Wilson in because he's a guy like you've been talking about, like a Fentrell Cypress, who can come in and probably shore up one of those corner positions, which allow you to invest and develop a little bit more easily without having to throw those young guys into that to that lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also want to say I did read somewhere where I think Wilson is friends with Kai Bates, maybe, if I'm saying that correctly. Okay. I think they train together, like, weekly. So hopefully that's that kind of inside connection between that and Tony White. Like I said, man, if you can get him, I think he's your day one starter there, number three player in the portal. And then all the guys, the Quindarius Jones and all these guys that, again, I really like those guys.
Yeah.
But you can kind of let them kind of go, the cream of the crop can rise over there. And you just have someone who can lock one side of the field down.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you get Wilson, I don't even know that you take Brown. But then on the offensive side here, as you mentioned, Cincinnati wide receiver Tony Johnson, who is a slot receiver. I think he's like 5'10", 180, 170, somewhere around there. He is visiting this weekend. 3 years at FAU prior to going to Cincinnati. 1,500 snaps of experience. Again, that veteran guy to come in and stabilize the position. Not going to blow you off the stat sheet, but here's what I love about it, man. 48 receptions last year, 450 yards, 6 touchdowns. This is music to my ears, Michael. 70.6% reception rate.
Let's go.
And in 48 receptions, I think he had like 68 targets, only 2 drops.
Let's go.
4% drop rate. I think our receivers drop 2 passes per game. And so, like, I think this is just one of them where, man, you can get that steadying force there to be that kind of wide receiver number 3 next to Squirrel White, next to Deuce Robinson. You can also obviously mix in Jalen Lucas there in the slot a little bit too. But this is that veteran guy who can bring stability to the position.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, a Javon Boggs is a guy you're really excited about. He was amazing in high school, but you've never seen him play.
Yeah.
So you don't entirely know what you're getting. So that's someone to look at there from the receiver position. And before I kick back to you on that, Vandy offensive lineman Josh Raymond is a redshirt freshman. He is scheduled to visit next week. He did not play in 2024 for the Commodores there. But, you know, we already got Gunnar Hansen from Vandy. So maybe that's your connection there. And, you know, we'll see, man. I mean, I was kind of hoping for maybe a little bit more experienced guy, like maybe a G5 guy or something like that. But
yeah,
I still feel like you got your starting five. And so now, at least with this guy, you're getting someone who can provide depth, who has a year of strength and conditioning. Because obviously, you know, that's the biggest roadblock for young offensive linemen is getting their body right to be able to compete at the college level. And you also can get some future years out of them. So that's something that I'm looking at there with him too. You know, and I'll throw it back to you on this, man. I like the targets that they have so far, right? The ones that they're bringing in. If they can land Wilson and Johnson and even Raymond, there, those three, I would be ecstatic about that, right?
Yeah, yep, yeah.
The one reason why I flipped the top open on the panic button, did you hear the defensive lineman that I mentioned? I didn't because there's no defensive lineman visiting right now. And I think that is the one position where I think you really needed to get – probably two, not even one, probably two. And so I'd like to see some movement there at defensive line. And I'd really just kind of like to see a more plug and play depth piece on the offensive line. But other than that, man, I think if you get the receiver and the cornerback, I think you're good at those two positions. I would just like to see some depth more in the trenches added after that.
Yeah. You know me, I've said this for a while now. I'm really big on, because the way of winning in college football is, what do you do in the trenches? What do you do on the defensive line? What do you do on the offensive line? So I believe, too, that they have their starting five. I believe, like, the Joshua Raymond kid from Brandy is more of a depth development piece, again, that they're looking at. So I can understand why they do that. I'm assuming they probably think they can get him on the cheap. You know, they're probably putting together what would look like a 2-year plan for him, so he understands, hey, you're coming in this year, you're probably not going to play much or if at all, but it's a development we're looking at for the next year. So I could see that as well. I think the Tony Johnson guy, gosh, it would be so nice because he gives you quality depth. He gives you a person with great catch radius and great catching hands, not dropping balls. And then he gives you that, just that extra level of creativity for the offense there as well, too. You know, I know they were looking at a couple other different people that they have mutual interest to, like a Gavin Blackwell from North Carolina, the Keylon Marion guy from BYU. I don't, because that was supposed to be like a big thing. I don't really know what happened with that, if he committed or if that just kind of went by. I know they offered him, as well as the guy from Albany, Wisconsin, Alexander, or something like that. So I'm curious to see what happens with that. They were linked to a bunch of D linemen, but then those D linemen committed pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the only two I've really actually heard about is more of this Aleko Stone guy from Old Miss Georgia Tech and Bernard Goodwin, who was at Wake Forest. But other than that, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, we have all said, like, you need to be looking at your DEs, your D line, you know, that tackle position. And I guess I understand that Tony White can be multiple, but if you're going to be multiple, you need depth. And right now you don't have it. So I'm curious to see if we hear more about that, or, you know, if they're like, you know, what Lil Wayne says, they're real G's. They're like lasagna. They're working in silence. So maybe that's what we're getting.
Well, we need some more beef in the lasagna, guys. Let's do that.
Yeah,
but it's funny because, I mean, that's the thing. Like, actually, and you just reminded me of something. I was working on an article that I hadn't got finished for the website, but the positions I'd like to see them attack in the portal. And really, one of the reasons that defensive line was because if you want to be multiple, you may be limiting what Tony White can do by not having the depth. Because once you go to two defensive tackles,
that's right,
you got Lyons and you got Jackson.
Yep.
Well, who else do you got that really sounds good? You got KJ Sampson, and then you got the freshman.
Yeah.
That's really about it. I think I counted. You only got five or six of them on the roster who I would consider true defensive tackle bodies. And so you may be limiting there. So even if you could bring in that quality two or three deep to shore that up, man, I think that would just make such a big difference. A Fabian Lovett type of guy,
that's right,
you know, something like that would be huge for them. And that's really what I want to see them do, is just to shore those things up. And really on the offensive line, I like the five that you got. It's just more for protecting against injury.
That's right.
You know, and again, that's the same way with the defensive line. If you lose one piece on the defensive line, you're in trouble, man. And that's what I would really like to see, you know. And hey, I mean, you made a change at defensive line. So this is at the coaching position. This was supposed to pay off. So let's, and I'm not going one way or the other on that. I'm just saying that, like, I would like to see a little more action in the portal in the trenches. That's pretty much it. But, man, if you get the other two kids, I think you're good there. I also think it is important to remember when you hear Houston and Cincinnati, they are Big 12 teams now. So, the stats that we're pulling up were against Big 12 teams. We'll see how it goes. But that's going to pretty much be it for the portal part of the show. We're going to go ahead and wrap that up. Like I said, we'll keep our ear to the ground. We'll see what happens with any new additions coming up. Hopefully we add at least a couple of guys going into the season. Just not really any reason. I don't think to panic right now, man. I really don't. Like, maybe if we make it through the weekend and you don't get, or through next week and you don't get any of these guys that you got visiting, maybe then I can see raising the red flags, right? Yeah, that absolutely. I get. But as of right now, if we come out of the weekend with two out of those three guys or three out of those four guys or whatever after next week, man, I think you're doing pretty good. I just need to see a little bit more on the defensive line would make me sleep better at nighttime. Now, let's talk about the NFL draft. Round one started last night. We just want to tack on a couple of quick thoughts here. But before we do that, I want to bring you guys a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Roback. Make sure you check out their FSU gear. It's great stuff. You'll love it. It can go all-purpose, whether it's at a tailgate, a game, a formal event. They got great stuff. You can also save 20% off your first purchase by using code SPEAR. That is Roback and code SPEAR. We appreciate you guys for supporting those that support us. Also, as you guys know, we haven't talked about it a whole lot recently because it hasn't been football season, but we are part of the College Huddle, a group of podcasts spreading nationwide. I believe we are coming up on 80 or maybe close to 100 podcasts that have joined this. We have representation from every single basically conference and independents and all that type of stuff. It's a great group of guys, and it is not necessarily a network. It's just everybody trying to help everybody get together and grow, and we are trying to, we'll be reaching out to them for content throughout the season to get insights to other teams. Well, they have a new YouTube channel that they just launched for the College Huddle, so make sure you go check that out. I will sub it below or link it below on this if you're watching on YouTube, so I would appreciate you guys doing that. And while we're liking and subscribing things, if you're enjoying the show, drop a like and subscribe here to Plant the Spear. We are oh so close, Michael, to getting to 2,000 subscribers. We would love to be pushed over the edge before the season gets here, so we really appreciate you guys doing that. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans as well. So now, Michael, let's talk about some NFL draft, man. It was kind of felt like a drama-free night, right? not really anything crazy there. Cam Ward did go number one overall. You know, Miami fans are going to be pounding their chest at work over this. Newsflash, guys, you didn't develop Cam Ward. You inherited Cam Ward.
That's right.
Whatever. But you know what, man? Cam Ward came in, and one thing I will say about him, like, I know he played for Miami, but the guy's just been, man, humble, work ethic. Like, I can't hate on that, right? Yeah. Yep. I don't like the logo attached to his name. That's about it. But you didn't develop him, Miami. Just let you know. Travis Hunter goes number two to the Jags. I know the Jags fans are probably happy about that. Look, I know everybody has a lot of hate for Travis Hunter on this, Florida State fan base or whatnot. Man, it's water under the bridge now. I ain't even worried about that anymore. But it is funny when I saw, I grew up just north of Jacksonville, so I always followed the Jags. When I saw them trade up from 5 to 2, I was like, they're about to do something incredibly. They're about to trade up to get Shedeur Sanders or something like that. The most Jacksonville move ever. And they were smart. They took Travis Hunter. I think one, he's going to be a good two-way player, and he puts butts in the seats. This is why I said they should have drafted Tebow back in the day for, like, just to put butts in the seats, man, to get interest in that thing. But, of course, as we just talked about, Shedeur, Mr. Legendary, Mr. Retired Number, after going 13-12.
What was his what pick did he get drafted at?
That would be a DNP. So he will be looking for round two. It was funny because I saw afterwards. I don't mean to go negative on the kid, but he was talking about, well, no one saw this coming. Well, buddy, I'm pretty sure everybody saw it
coming.
Everybody who watched you play football saw that coming. And again, man, we were talking about this before the show. I don't want to go into all this, but, like, man, I don't have ill will towards Shedeur, the Sanders family, none of them. Like, I don't like the way Deion badmouthed Florida State when he didn't get the job, when he wasn't qualified to get the job. Right. If they hired Deion to be the coach next year, guess what? I'm getting me some prime shades.
That's right.
Whatever. It don't even matter. Drinking prime drink. That ain't his thing, but I don't care. But man, the arrogance of Shedeur Sanders, I think it was a good humbling factor that he went, that he did not get taken into the first round. It's just, it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
I just don't like the conceitedness. There's confidence and there's arrogance, right?
Yeah.
And that line has been way crossed there into the arrogance side of things. But as we look towards round two, and I'll let you give me some thoughts on round one. Hopefully this is where we see Florida State's own AZ Thomas come off the board. He is one of the best players out there remaining. I know they talked about him going late first round, early second round, so we'll see how that shakes out. I think Josh Farmer is in the conversation to go in two or three as well. And then, you know, maybe we get down the line, you get Ryan Fitzgerald has an opportunity. There's some other Florida State players in there that are looking to go, but I think those are really the two to three names that you're going to see have a good opportunity to get drafted. But hopefully AZ comes off the board today in round two.
Yeah, listen, you know what? For Cam Ward, you know, kudos to him. You know, he came from, you know, Incarnate to Washington State to Miami. You know, when he got to Miami, we all made fun of it, like he's going to be turnover. But we also admitted that
way better than we thought.
Yeah, he could be turnover Cam Ward, or he could be electric, and he turned out to be electric. I think he only had seven interceptions on the year, 30 something touchdowns, maybe one or two fumbles. I mean, he got them to 10 wins. I mean, all they got to show for it was the Pop-Tart. You know, not even the win for the Pop-Tart. But he was good.
He should have had electric. A Pop-Tart chain. He should have had a Pop-Tart chain on.
That would have been awesome. And then somebody broke it because that's what they look like. But yeah, I mean, whether or not he's going to succeed in the NFL is still up to for grabs. I mean, the number one pick, congratulations to him. And, you know, Miami fans, you'll beat your chest about this until the season starts. And then you'll go back into your, you know, can't win a championship cave. So we'll let you have this for right now. I do think AZ, I was hoping and I was thinking that he could have gone in that like 25 to 32 slot. That's where I thought he would be at. But, you know, alas, he falls into the second round. I'm telling you, whoever gets him, man, they're getting a dog. You know, I'm not going to say he's the next Jalen Ramsey of the NFL from Florida State, but I mean, you know, he's going to play hard and he's going to be good. And then of course, you know, Farmer there. And so just see where he ends up landing. And then Fitzgerald probably is looking like six or seven rounds, usually when you get your kickers there. And then the other guys, you know, just hope for the best for them. And we all knew that this was going to be a weak draft class for Florida State this year. After having an amazing draft class the previous year with Benson and Verse and Fisk, you know, LA Rams, baby. And so, yeah, I'll say that we knew this was going to be a weak draft class. Can I just say this, Jesse? Can we get back to the day when we had at least one or two guaranteed first round draft picks? Can we get back to that day so I can enjoy the NFL draft again? Like we had it for a little bit last year. Can we get back to that day? Like, come on, man.
I know. The funny thing is, like, I don't really do NFL like that. Like, I'm more of just – I'm diehard college, obviously. Yeah. But I don't really follow the NFL a whole heck of a lot. My wife was like, oh, yeah, the draft starts on Thursday, so let's make sure, you know, we're home to turn it on. I was like, oh, it does? All right, I better make a graphic then just in case.
Make a graphic.
Again, like, you just didn't – you know, you didn't think about it because we just – like you said, it wasn't expected this year. But I think somebody will get a steal with AZ Thomas. You know, one of the things that I had read on his draft profile was more just about that he didn't have a great speed showing in the combine, so there's a little bit of concern there. But they know that he's a sticky corner, has a lot of experience. So – I think he's going to do really good. And Josh Farmer, you know, obviously he's a man child, obviously. Yeah. So I think he's going to do well there. You know, what really stole the show was the baby vomiting.
Oh, my gosh. Did you see that?
The lady starts clapping and Buddy's just like bobbleheading everywhere. And I'd probably puke if I had to play for the Saints, too. I mean,
exactly.
But no, I thought that was funny as well. So the last thing I want to get to here before we wrap the show up is baseball has a big series against number 19 Louisville on the road this weekend. And, you know, we have to go back a couple of weeks here to where their last series, man, that, you know, they were coming off that really rough series against Wake Forest. And then they lost to Florida to back that up, which was a series loss. And I know that's a midweek. It's kind of different there. Man, they really, really needed that sweep over ranked Virginia Tech team to really kind of right the ship there, right? And so They get that. Things are looking pretty good. Unfortunately, obviously, we'll talk about this in a second, but the UVA series got canceled, and then you are able to bounce back against Stetson on Tuesday and get the win there. And so you really, you know, maybe this will work out to where you got a little bit of extra rest and some guys are ready to go for the stretch of the season because, man, this starts a really, really big finish for the season for Florida State baseball. You obviously have number 19 this weekend. Then you have number 2 Clemson next weekend. Then you get Cal. Then you get number 8 UNC. So yeah. You have 3 ranked teams in 3 of the next 4 weeks, 2 of them being top 10. So this is a big series for Florida State because now you're really trying to do that last minute vying for the national seed. And the way that we've seen Florida State play at home versus on the road over the last 2 years, you really want to be hosting that regional and potentially that super regional. So this is going to be really big for Florida State. Now, they will unfortunately be without Max Williams. I know we had talked about this before the show where he got ejected for being a little heavy on the smack talk against Stetson there. You know, I love baseball. I don't really buy into the unwritten rules and all that. You know, the players run their mouth nowadays. It is what it is. You see the Tennessee team that was probably the most crap-talking team you ever seen, won the national championship last year. You know, we were talking about this before the show, man. Like, this team sometimes struggles with energy, right? Yep. And so, yes, I think you can rein that in a little bit. Maybe Link needs to pull him to the side, be like, hey, look, man, you know, just calm it down, right? It's a Tuesday against Stetson. Let's bring it down a little bit. That's really the only problem that I have with it, right? Is the fact that you got ejected for on a Tuesday night game against Stetson when you had a ranked series coming up this weekend. And the way college works, he gets suspended for 2 more games, so he's out for 2 of the 3.
Yeah.
So that's not great. But you know, sometimes you got to have a spark, man. Sometimes you got to find the energy, you know. And hey, look, man, this is why women's softball has become so much popular. Them girls will let you hear about it. They,
yes, they will.
Are not shy of running their mouth and showing emotion and all that stuff. So, man, not ideal, but, you know, you're going to have to be without Max Williams for 2 to 3 games. But look, man, every now and then you need your leaders to step up and give you a spark. Just maybe not on a Tuesday against Stetson.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. Listen, like, this makes me so mad. I'm trying not to get too mad. These are kids, man. They're playing a college sport. Right. This is the best time of their lives before they have to make this like their full time job or at least try to make it their full time job and play in the big leagues. But you're also seeing this in the big leagues of like these unwritten rules that supposedly guard the rules. Man, come on. Like there is sportsmanship. I get that
for sure.
And there is like, hey, don't screw your team. So like Max Williams doing this and actually screwing his team by him not being able to play against a big game, a big series against Louisville. Okay, I get that. But for all these old fogies out there who are like, oh, you just look like an idiot and a jerk and all like that. No, man, let the kids play. Like, that's the fun of the game. I mean, you go sit down in a college basketball game. You go sit down in a college football game and you actually get up to where those players are. They talking way more ish than you ever know, right? And so this guy running around the bases looking at the pitcher, come on, man. You know what that pitcher should do? Should take it. And then the next time he gets an opportunity against that guy, put one in his side. And then that guy's pitcher will put one in his side. And guess what? We'll be done and we can move on with the game. Right? Like, that's what you do. Like,
exactly.
All this whining and crying. Hey, that chair. Oh, my God. Come on, man. It's baseball.
It's sports in general. They're just it's competitive. He's a competitive guy. I mean, I get it. It's a gentleman's sport or whatever they want to call it and things like that. But like you said, man, just beam the next guy up and move on from it.
Move on.
You know, I saw a story. It was on a documentary about Greg Maddux or something like that. I think they threw at one of his guys like once or twice, and then they told him, they were like, dude, if you don't beat this team, you're going to get sent back to the minors. Mm-hmm. And so like he said, well, I'm willing to risk my future. The very next play, he comes out and just beams the dude. And it was just like, he said, I had to do it. And he said, you know, the respect he got from his teammates. So yeah, man, I mean, maybe keep it under wraps a little bit there to not get ejected, but I have no problem with playing with emotions and things like that, man, obviously. Best of luck to baseball this weekend as they travel up to Louisville. Obviously, that would be a big season, a big series win if they could get that win over a ranked Louisville team. So now to close this out, Michael, to close out this episode, I saved this for last. Obviously, we did not record last week, so we did not get a chance to touch on it. I just want to spend a minute on this. Obviously, we are with you guys in sharing our emotions for the tragedy that happened on Florida State's campus last week with the shooting that did happen. You know, we obviously hate to see anything like this happen, so we did want to just make it known, because we did not get a chance to talk about it last week, that our thoughts and prayers are with everybody out there, especially the two victims that passed away in this. You know, we are a Knoll family. We are unconquered, and we will overcome this. For those of you who may be dealing with mental trauma from this, make sure that you talk to somebody. There are people that can help you out with this. As most of you guys know, I am a first responder full time. That's what I do in my full time job. So shout out to the first responders that were there on campus helping take care of people. You know, I have a different perspective on this than a lot of people. No, I have not necessarily been in that type of situation. But I do understand the mental stress that it can take. I have obviously been a part of seeing shooting victims. I have been a lot of mass trauma and death and devastation and things in my career over 13 years. You know, there are things I've seen that I only wish I could forget.
Yeah.
And so it's not worth bottling it up, right? That's what we always try and do. So I just want to let everybody know that there are resources out there. I know President McCullough had talked about this. I also want to give a shout out to the administration, who was feeding people afterwards and just trying to bring that sense of community. So I know this is a really tough thing to go to see happen so close to home for us. It is just these types of things just don't make any sense, man. You know, yeah. I mean, because at the end of the day, my feelings are always like, I don't get divided by politics. I don't get divided by race. Obviously, Michael's my best friend over here.
That's right.
You know, that stuff is stupid, man. It's just stupid, right? Like, why are we arguing over this stuff? Because at the end of the day, man, your neighbor is going to be the one to come to your aid, right? And so, like, I don't understand why we don't just put our differences aside. I don't understand why we don't just focus on the things that make us different are what make us special, right? And that should be celebrated, not something, a point of contention. So, man, just nothing but just want to share vibes of peace and love with everybody after this event. And just know that our thoughts and prayers are with you guys.
Yeah, Jesse, man, I just really appreciate what you said there. And just echo that, you know, it is a just difficult time to see the families and students just in general suffering from, you know, a place that is supposed to be a place of education, a place of learning, a place of growth, maturity, and all those things. And man, just leave politics, leave all that just crap aside. That doesn't matter right now. What matters is, you know, there's seven people, two of which are not coming back to school. They're not going home to their families. They're not ever going to get married, have kids, any of that nature. And that's what we grieve. And so as a community of Knoll Nation, man, we just, as Jesse said, we're praying for you. Gosh, we're with you. We see you. And we just hope that, you know, you guys can find peace and healing in this season and time. Both, you know, Jesse, as he said, as a first responder, he sees a lot of this. You know, as a pastor, I hear and see a lot of this. I'm, you know, working and sitting with people in their worst moments sometimes. And we're there, you know. Just know that, man, as Plant the Spirit, we're praying for everybody. Gosh, and we just hope there's just so much healing on campus that's happening right now. We appreciate what the athletic program did when they came and fed all those kids, all those students. I think it was over 600 students or something like that. Yeah. They got fed that day. We love the support that's been out there. There are so much resources out there. If you're walking through this, you don't have to walk through. Look, you can reach out to both Jesse and myself. You can find us on social media. If you just want to talk, if you just want someone to listen while you just empty yourself of every emotion you feel about this, we are more than willing to do that. And so just know we're there for you.
Yeah, man, definitely. So that's going to be it for this episode, guys. You know, didn't want to end necessarily on a somber note, but we did want to address that as well, guys. So obviously this is, you know, this is a family. And so when it affects the family, it's something that we have to address there as well. So we do appreciate you guys watching and tuning in with us. We will be back with you guys hopefully sooner than later. Hopefully we have some commits to talk about next week to jump back on with. But that's going to do it for us in this episode, guys. So love all you guys. We love our Knoll family. And we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Knolls.
Go Knolls.